Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will indeed encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight I have on as a repeat guest a very prolific, up-and-coming, successful author of gay romances. His name is Andrew Gray. He's an author who grew up in western Michigan with a father who loved to tell stories and a mother who loved to read them. Since then, he's lived throughout the country and traveled throughout the world. He has a master's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and works in information systems for a large corporation. His hobbies include collecting antiques, gardening, and leaving his dirty dishes anywhere but in the sink, particularly when he's writing. He considers himself blessed with an accepting family, fantastic friends, and the world's most supportive and loving partner. Aren't you blessed, Andrew? He currently lives in a beautiful, historic Carlisle, Pennsylvania. That's his town. So, at any rate, with that said, I'd like to introduce Andrew. Andrew, once again, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so pleased to have you here again, and I'm really excited to hear about your latest projects. Just to let you know, folks, before we went on the air, Andrew told me he had just finished a book today, and he's all set to start one again tomorrow. How many books does this make now, Andrew?
80 plus.
And how many years?
Since 2007.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I thought I was prolific with 22 books in 8 years. Wow. Amazing.
My publisher promises me that when I publish my 100th book, they'll throw a party. That should be sometime next year.
Well, I'd hold out for a trip around the world. So tell me, do you channel your books?
Sort of. When I'm writing, I sit down, have an idea, and start to write. I don't have grand outlines. I don't have a lot of stuff written down. I may have 3 or 4 sentences on the book, and then I go. After I get about 3 or 4 chapters in, then I do character sheets so that I can make sure that my characters are consistent through the book. By that point, I know them. I know my two main characters, so I do up my character sheet so that later on I'm not having Brian have blue eyes in one part, brown eyes in another, and gray hair in the third. You know that things remain consistent and that their personalities remain consistent.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many series of books do you write? Is there more than one?
Yeah, there's probably 12 to 14. in the romance genre, series are very quite important. Readers love
I hear you. Yeah.
Readers love to revisit characters. They love to revisit worlds.
Oh, yes.
My largest series has right now 8 novels and 2 novellas in it, and the 9th novel will come out in January.
Wow.
That's the Love Means series. That's the Farm series.
All right.
The last one was Love Means Patience.
Okay. Well, let me throw out a challenge for you. How about if you really shake it up a little bit and take some of your characters on multi-life journeys where they reincarnate in different forms and work through whatever their life issues are?
Okay. I don't generally write paranormal.
Well, I'm not talking paranormal. I'm just throwing that idea out there. I believe in reincarnation. I don't know if you do.
Not generally, no. No, mm-hmm. I'm not a reincarnation type person.
Yeah.
But
if you wanted to look at it, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, generally what I write and what I'm known for is contemporary romance. I don't have paranormal elements or deeply reincarnation things that get into those sorts of things. There are entire genres of MM romance that do that. They talk about multiple lives and talk about the reincarnation.
Really? I didn't know that.
Stories. Oh, I've read some wonderful stories. They're generally classified as paranormal. In the genre, that's how they do.
That would be something that I would do, which people could either look at as being paranormal or could accept as spiritual reality, however they wanted to interpret it, because I believe in reincarnation, and I could spin tales like that with some of my characters, for instance, and we'll get to your series in a minute. I'm digressing, but I have a series based on my last published novel, Shades of Gay, which is a trilogy, and I could easily take those characters into other lifetimes, and that would even cross over lifetimes. That would be really interesting. But let's get into your series a bit. Some of the things I'd like to explore tonight are your series, the books that you want to promote, and also to talk about where you're at spiritually today. Is that all right?
Sure.
Great. Okay, so first of all, how can people find out information about you, and what is your website?
Well, my website is andrewgreybooks.com. It's andrewgreybooks.com.
Your books available?
They're available at Amazon. They're available at barnesandnoble.com. They are available at All Romance eBooks, which is a major romance site. They're also available at my publisher's site, which is Dream Spinner Press.
Gotcha.
And with Dream Spinner generally has regular sales about once a month, so you sort of want to look there because you can get them on sale.
Okay.
And I love a sale.
Mm-hmm. I do too, and I have been guilty of going to Amazon to use booksellers, and I wonder if I buy a book that's new from a bookseller that's not on Amazon, does the author still make a royalty on that? Because you can get new books for dirt cheap.
If you're talking about from a reseller, you know, like a used book, no.
Oh, you know, they have all these affiliated booksellers that sell used and new books. If I buy a new book from one of those that's half the cost of Amazon, do you still make a royalty?
Yes, but it depends upon how it was originally purchased.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I like to be spiritual about it. I like to earn royalties on my books too. And
I was going to say, the one thing I can tell you is if you purchase the print copy through Dream Spinner Press, you get the electronic copy along with it.
Oh, that's a great deal. Really good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you buy the print copy, you get the electronic download for free.
Okay, gotcha. Well, let's talk about your farm series. What makes this series so popular?
This series, it's actually the series it's closest to my heart. I actually set it on the farm that I used to work at when I was a kid.
Cool.
And each one of the stories, the first one is Love Means Courage. There's Love Means No Shame. Love Means No Boundaries. Freedom.
Ooh, love
no
it.
Limits.
Love those titles.
Each one
Wonderful.
Of Each one of these stories, while they're set very rural, so the stories are very pastoral, they're very different and removed from most of my readers' reality. Most readers live in the city or are urban. And
yeah, right.
So it's something that's very different. And
okay.
Each one of the books deals with an aspect of love. What does love mean?
Okay.
Okay.
Now,
and
yeah.
They just love them. In the last book, I Love Means Patience, I dealt with, of course, patience, but what makes it patient is that both of the main characters are somehow suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned that. Go ahead.
So that takes, it takes patience to get over it. It takes love.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that sort of thing doesn't happen quickly. It takes patience. Two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. It requires patience.
Well, let me just put this out there, because I have a friend and favorite fan on the line who has suffered from that in her lifetime, and she might want to talk to you a little bit about that. But what inspired you to put that as a theme in your story?
I had a friend who in December I quit my day job, and now I write full time. And
right.
before I resigned, I had
mm-hmm.
met a friend. She was a coworker out in Kansas.
Okay.
And she was a West Point graduate, and wonderful lady. I loved her to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But she was talking about, at lunch one day, she was talking about some of her friends and what some of
okay.
them were going through, because she is ex-military. Her husband is currently active duty. And they were talking about what they were going through, how some of her friends had gone over to the war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan and had come back with this post-traumatic stress, and how debilitating it could be for them. And that just sort of got this whole wheel turning in my head about I need to write a story about this. It needs to be realistic. It needs to have that realistic feel. And she helped give me the details. She helped me with the research, and I was able to write the story.
Cool. Really cool. I have never read one of your books. Which one would you recommend to me for a good starter?
We'll start with No Shame. Love Means No Shame. It's one of the,
books
I wrote.
Oh, I love that title, because No Shame is good. And I even called a dog of mine No Shame, because I loved him.
In this book, this is the original. This is the first one I wrote in this series.
Mm-hmm.
And it introduces Jeff and Eli, who are the core of the series.
All right.
Jeff's family owns a farm, and Eli was raised Amish. So
would you do me a favor, when the show is over, send me an email with that title, and I will buy that book tonight.
Okay, sure.
All right. So where did we leave off? We were talking about your farm series and the post-traumatic stress syndrome theme. What else would you like to say about your series?
Well, for that particular series, it's very pastoral.
I get
a lot of readers who write me and say, this is the book I read when I want peace, when I
mm-hmm.
want that wonderful feeling, and I want it to come in that pastoral, less frenetic way that our lives are. A lot of books, you know, have a very fast pace. These are a little slower, just like country life is slower.
Mm-hmm.
They deal with things on the farm. They deal with riding and horses. In The No Boundaries, which is the third book in the series, one of the main characters is blind.
Wow.
And he learns how to ride a horse with help.
Okay.
He learns, okay, that's the whole No Boundaries, is he expands his boundaries, and he had led a sheltered life, and he expands his boundaries to realize that he can do anything.
Well, you know, the pastoral theme and the theme of peace strikes me as being very spiritual. Do you consider yourself to be a spiritual writer? Because I know you're a spiritual person. Have you ever considered that?
I guess I don't look at it that way. I've never
okay.
looked at it as a spiritual thing, but it probably is. It's just that I haven't looked at it that way.
Yeah.
I look at it for me as I write those books when I want peace.
I hear.
When I want
okay.
something quiet. When I want that
yeah.
that inner downtime to let me do to just be and to be calm
mm-hmm.
and quiet, because some of the books I write have a lot of action, and
okay.
that requires a lot of energy and a lot of mental energy to put that in. Some of them are very angsty with a lot of emotional depth, emotional detail, going back and forth, what's going to happen, a lot of trauma, a lot of, as
mm.
we call, man pain.
How about woman pain? Any woman pain in there? Any woman pain in there?
Not in MM books generally. It's all man pain.
Yeah. Okay. I just wondered if these are books that women would be able to relate to, or people who don't identify themselves as being gay?
65% of my readership are women.
Really? Okay.
Yes. The entire
cool.
MM show,
okay.
MM romance is viable because
yes,
of
it
the,
is.
Because of the women readership. It's not gay men
yes.
that make it viable. It's the lovely ladies of romance who also read MM that,
yeah.
that make the entire genre viable. So yes,
well,
women
most,
relate to this very much because love is love
yes.
in their viewpoint.
Yeah, that's right. And most women really embrace gay men and love gay men. And that's wonderful. I think that's why we have a real affinity as gay men with women. Because, you know, it's nice to have somebody that likes you. Oh?
Well, and women love gay men because they can be friends with gay men without any sexual tension.
Right. And hopefully that won't spell out any avenue for jealousy with their male partners. No. Although I have a female friend who's married to a husband, and he still is, he still questions my motives, you know. He says he's gay. He's gay. Come on, give me a break. He's not into vaginas, really. You know. So.
I have a friend that I'm going to a convention with next year, and we're sharing a hotel room because some of these conventions, the hotel rooms can be quite expensive. So we're going to get a little more expensive hotel room, and we're going to
yeah.
share. And her husband questioned it. And Jerry
yeah.
just laughed. She just laughed and says, Andrew has one rule.
Okay.
No girl parts. He doesn't see girl parts.
Okay.
He doesn't come anywhere near the girl parts. He doesn't want to see them. So that's it. That's the only
okay.
rule. No girly parts.
Well, we have two books. We have two
book.
Of your books we're going to talk about tonight. And I'm wondering if there's anything else you want to say about your farm series.
No, I think we're good.
Okay.
I think we're good.
Let's digress for a minute. Let's talk a little bit about spirituality. Then we're going to talk about Electrochemistry, his latest release, and Love Comes Home. And we have a caller on the line who may want to speak with you. And she's a very spiritual person. So to humor her, which I like to do because she's my favorite fan, I'd like to just talk spirit a little bit. Are you open to that?
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Okay. So we have talked spirit before a bit on the last program. We're not going to rehash your religious background and growing up years and coming out and all of that stuff. While that is all spiritual and part of a person's individual journeys, if people want to find out about that, all they have to do is go to differentstrokes.freespiritbroadcasting and look up my last interview with Andrew. What I'm wondering is where you're at today, because today, do you believe today is where it's at and staying present to the moment is where you unite with your spirit, find your joy, and all good things?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Tell me about that.
One of the things that's important for me since leaving my day job, which was very, very stressful, is learning to live for today, learning to live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Learning
mm-hmm.
to not worry about what's going to happen in next year and in 3 years and in 4 years. I mean, I do plan. We do plan for the future, mostly mm-hmm. for fun things, if we can help, if we can
yep.
do it, like we're taking a two-week cruise in November.
Cool.
But I live for today and find
mm-hmm.
the joy that there is today.
And
that's very important.
It is very important, and I trust you're pretty successful at that.
I mean, you're not going to be happy if you are constantly expecting your happiness to come around the corner.
It will never.
You're just going to be disappointed because it never comes.
That's right. And how do you stay in a space where you attract that happiness?
Well, every day I do something, as I say, for me, but I do something that I mean, I write, which I enjoy,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
you cannot sit home all day long in the same four walls and write.
Mm-hmm.
The world is just going to get too small and you're going to go absolutely stir crazy. So every day I do something, if you will, for me. Today it was an hour and a half in the yard, and I did
mm-hmm.
the gardening.
Okay.
Some days I walk downtown, meet friends for lunch. Doesn't have to be big for me. Doesn't have to be big things. I'm pretty much a homebody. I'm a pretty quiet
yep.
person. The
yep.
real me is very quiet. Andrew tends to be very outgoing, but the real me tends to be a little quiet.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Quiet things are just fine. They make me happy.
Well, what is the real you?
Well, what I mean is that Andrew is it's a pseudonym.
Yes. It's
and
just
Andrew
a part
has,
of who you are.
Yes, but Andrew has his own personality. Andrew is
I hear you.
Yep. So that means that Andrew is Andrew goes to conventions and he's very outgoing.
Okay.
Andrew spends a lot of time on Facebook and is very outgoing on Facebook and Twitter and all the social media things.
Gotcha.
My real person is not even on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook. I don't. Okay. My real person doesn't.
Interesting.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't do any of that. One, well, doing it as Andrew is enough. You know,
yeah,
I go
okay.
to dinner with friends. I'm, you know, the non-Andrew persona is very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew
okay.
is an extrovert. I am naturally an introvert, which surprised
well,
my publisher all the hell.
That's interesting because I started out as an introvert. And I'm not saying that I became an extrovert. I'm really right in between. But I was very shy as a kid. I had very low mm-hmm. self-esteem. I suffered from trauma. And David, the real me, not my persona, did not emerge until much later. But I'm very much a moderate. I'm medium-sized. I have moderate views, although they tend to be more liberal when it comes to politics and other things.
Mm-hmm.
I believe to each his own, different strokes for different folks, which is the name of my show. But I know how to go all the way. I know how to – my persona knows how to be a total extrovert, and I can even be a total introvert. I can be whatever I want to be, and I love it.
Well, as there are things I can do as Andrew that I would not do as me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Andrew being the author and public means that Andrew gets to be a little over the top. I tend to be
okay.
like I said, quiet. So I'm going to Authors After Dark next month in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
At the convention I will moderate a number of panels. They love it because they love how I moderate panels, so I get asked to moderate all kinds of panels.
Okay.
I will also host the book awards at the convention, and I will have my shtick that I will do that will be, you know, I'll do the whole Billy Crystal and the Oscars thing.
Cool. I love it.
And my own, personally, me, I would never do anything like that. But as Andrew, I can do all that. And it comes naturally as Andrew. It's part of Andrew's person. It's part of Andrew's personality. He's part of me, but it's part
mm-hmm,
of Andrew's
mm-hmm.
personality. When I flip into that, I do that for 4 days, and then I come home completely exhausted and sit and write and do nothing for a week and a half.
Okay. Well, let me ask you another question. This is kind of delving into some what is new spiritual ground for people. Do you believe that you co-create your reality with quote-unquote God or Source or whatever you want to call it? Or do you believe that you do it yourself? Or do you believe that God does it? What do you believe?
I believe I have a muse that sits on my shoulder and he sort of whispers in my ear sometimes whenever he gets the voice.
Gotcha. Okay, I love it.
I know who my muse is.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told twice by who my muse is. Once by a psychic that my sister went to, and then once one that I visited that was quite interesting. My muse that sits on my shoulder is Oscar Wilde.
Oh, love it. Do you suppose? Yeah.
And Oscar is very happy.
What if you are the reincarnation of Oscar Wilde? Do you ever consider that?
I don't think so. I think that Oscar's just sitting on my shoulder. He whispers
every now
and
then. Okay, so he's like an angel on your shoulder.
Yes, I've been told that it's Oscar Wilde and that he's very happy because he's writing and he's the muse for things that he would absolutely love to have been able to write if he had lived now and could write it.
So he writes through you. You're a channel for Oscar Wilde.
I don't know how you want to call it. I just know the muse is Oscar. I call him Oscar. I talk to Oscar occasionally. It's like, wake up, Oscar. I need an idea. You got to help. And up comes an idea. Yeah. So
really cool. Do you believe that we attract that which we're seeking?
I believe that when the time is right, whatever you want will find you.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
But you shouldn't be looking for it.
I agree with that too.
I think that the really good things in life come to you when you don't expect them.
Yes, but I'm going to play the devil's advocate for a moment because I don't think that it's wrong to seek. However, if I stay in a place of woe is me, why hasn't this happened to me yet? Nothing's going to happen.
You have to be ready for whatever you do. If you're looking for a relationship, you have to be ready for a relationship, but you can't go. But if you're going out and actively searching and desperately searching for a relationship, you're just going to come across as needy, and it's not going to happen.
Right.
You have to
be
in that place. You have to be in that place of happiness and ready and open for it, and they will come to you.
That speaks to me. So, what advice would you offer to people who are desperate for love, it's not finding them, they're pounding the pavement, they're scaring people away, all they want to do is be loved.
Join a club, find a group of people that you have something in common with, be it a baseball, if you're into sports, join a sports team. If you're into gardening, join a garden club. If you're a writer, join a writer's group.
Mm-hmm.
Find people that you have something in common with and that you like. And from there, the world opens up. When I met Dominic, we were living in Milwaukee. I had friends, and those friends had a dinner party. And Dominic was at the dinner party, and we met, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Was it love at first sight?
It was like at first sight. I don't believe in love at first sight. I believe in lust at first sight.
In all
of that sort of thing. But love at first sight, in my experience, love requires time.
Mm-hmm.
It requires time. It requires a deeper connection than seeing somebody and that. The love at first sight, well, that's just hormones.
Okay.
In my experience, that's just hormones. Lust at first sight, a light at first sight, love takes time.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with anything that you say. However, I do believe it's possible to have love at first sight. And we don't need to go there in this show because I want to talk about your books. I know you would like to. I just want to ask you this. You took a leap of faith when you left a full-time job during which you were still producing novels like popcorn going off on a hot stove. And I know how you did it because you write like I do. And you take care of yourself in between. So that gives you more energy to create, and you have a muse. You have Oscar Wilde. You probably have other muses. Whether or not you're aware of them, I don't know. But you have spirit. You are spirit-driven. And because of that, you accomplish whatever it is your heart desires, and there are always plenty of hours in the day. Am I correct?
I accomplish what I want. I'm very goal-driven.
Okay. Okay.
I'm a very goal-driven individual.
What I'm leading towards is this. You've made it clear that when you want something that you don't have, it's not going to happen. However, you probably dream big, am I right?
Generally, yes.
Okay. So what I'm asking you is, do you want to be a famous novelist?
That's not necessary.
Okay. Well, then let me rephrase the question, because I don't want to be famous either.
I don't have to be a famous novelist.
What I'm asking is, do you want to be widely read and prosperous?
Of course.
At what you do.
Yes, I would love to be widely read and prosperous.
Okay.
And I guess the really wonderful thing about being a novelist is you can be wildly read and prosperous and walk down the street and nobody knows who you are.
That would be the ideal, wouldn't it? That would be the ideal, especially if...
I do not want all the crap that comes along with being famous.
Neither do I. So do you believe you will be... I mean, you already are a successful novelist in your own right. You've written 88 books. Do you believe that the dream of being widely read, that getting your message out there for people to enjoy and that you will become prosperous will come true?
Yes, eventually.
And then it will. That's how it works. Because you are so in sync with the universe. You are so in sync with what I hold true in my heart, what I have learned from years of experience and delving into getting in touch with myself and with God. Every word you speak resonates truth to me. And you have total faith in yourself, and I believe that is the primary ingredient in attracting that which your heart desires. I mean, I'm sure when you were a little boy and you listened to "When You Wish Upon a Star, Your Dreams Come True" resonated with you, and you believed every word of it.
You have to if you're going to write romance.
There you go. Let's talk about electrochemistry, unless there's anything else you want to add.
Sure. So.
Okay. So this is your latest release.
What would you like to know? Yes, this is the third in the chemistry series.
Well, let's put it this way. What would you like us to know about it?
It's the third in the series. The first one's organic chemistry. The second one is biochemistry. And the third one is electrochemistry. I have so much fun writing these stories. They are just amazing fun to
write. Great.
They're all set here in town. In Carlisle, Pennsylvania, where I live, we have a college here. It's Dickinson College, and I set all three of the stories basically at Dickinson College. So it's all
cool.
Generally, the first one is a professor and a coach. The next two are new adult. They're the college age students. So the characters are of college age, and they're so much fun. It's so much fun to be able to experience and build and then experience their life and their awakening and figuring out who they are and what they want.
Ooh, that sounds spiritual.
Which is incredibly fun. That's what you do with these characters when they're that age, because that's what I was doing when I was in college, is figuring out what it is you want, who you are.
Sure. I still do once in a while,
in
but
MM
I'm
romance,
not 20
that's
anymore.
A big deal. No, but
yeah.
It's a big deal. In MM romance, it's a big deal, because in every single one of the books that I've written, in some way or form, each character is trying to figure out who they are.
Okay.
Because on our life journey, we're always, to a degree, trying to figure out who we are. But gay individuals have to not only come to grips with who they are, but that they are different.
Right.
And everybody's journey to do that is a little different. And I've written 88 different ones. In some way, shape, or form, I've written dozens and dozens of various journeys of how they figure out who they are and how, you know, and then find somebody to love. Like I said, the chemistry series, I was always a geeky student, and so each one of these has basically the geek and the popular person. In the first one, it's the really 21-year-old geeky professor, think Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory, but less annoying, and one of the football coaches. Yes, organic chemistry is my homage to Sheldon.
Okay.
I absolutely love that show, so I had to come up with my own version of Sheldon. Well, like I said, one that's a little less annoying. And the next one is, you know, the science major and the football star, and then the last one, it's a dancer. Basically, my one character is a former dancer, very graceful, very popular, and the other one is again the science geek, and they come together on a cruise of all things. So it's a great summer read.
Oh wow! Where's the cruise set?
Well, the cruise is a Caribbean cruise.
Oh, nice.
They come together on this. They've seen each other on campus, but they come together when they're on this cruise.
Okay.
And that's when they get to know one another. One of the precepts of romance is you can't have a romance if you can't bring your characters together. And the easiest way to bring them together is to put them together in the same space that they can't really walk away from. And when you're on the high seas, you can't just walk off the ship. So it works really well.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, it's like I said, they're fun.
You've answered a lot of the questions I was going to ask you. Let me ask you this. Is it ever difficult to develop a happy ending?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay, tell us about
two books I've had. I'm going to step back a little bit. Okay, so let me take you on a bit of a journey. In the Love Means books that we go back to, those are some of the early ones I wrote. One of the characters is Jeff. His name is Jeff Lawton. And Jeff Lawton is the character I know best. I've written Jeff from 2 to 40. Okay, so Jeff very well, and the next book in that series comes out in January, and you will get to know Jeff even more, because that's Love Means Europe. So what I did was I decided about 2 years ago to write some young adult stories.
Okay.
So I chose as my pen name Jeff Lawton. I chose that character's name as my pen name for the young adult. And so far I've written two young adult stories. The first one is By the Creek. And that one... Young adult stories are very difficult with a happy ending. I mean, young adult stories are characters 16, 17, 18 years old. They, by and large, when you're that age, you have very little control over your own destiny. You still live with mom and dad. You are still under mom and dad's rules. You still have to deal with all that. So you have limited control of your destiny. And in, I have a young adult book coming out in October. It's called Under the Stars. And
okay.
Under the Stars, it's a Western young adult. I set it on a dude ranch in Wyoming. So what we have is we have the son of the dude ranch owners, and we have the city kid from Chicago who comes in for the 2 weeks with his parents. He doesn't want
okay.
to be there, but the two meet. They get to be friends. They get to be more than friends. In 2 weeks, how do you give these, and then he's going to go home to Chicago. How do you possibly give them a happy ending?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was very difficult, but I did do it. At least I gave them a happy for now. I didn't give them a happy ever after, but I gave them a
I
happy
thought so.
For now. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, now is where it's at.
Adult, I believe that for young adult, that is as far as you can go. You cannot expect 16, 17, and 18 years old to find the love of their life forever, that happy ever after. But you can give
right.
them a happy for now. You can give them this. They're happy. They have come. They have made these initial steps on their journey. And
right.
those initial steps involve each other. And at the end, they are together. They are happy. And then whatever happens from there, happens from there.
How spiritual. I love it. Okay.
Those are very hard, very difficult to write. Those two,
yeah.
the two young adult books have both kicked my butt. And
wow.
the next month I have to write. Once I finish the Christmas, this story for Christmas that I will start next week, I will
mm-hmm.
probably have to write, probably it's time to write yet another, one more young adult.
Okay. Well, you're not afraid of a challenge. I admire that.
You just have to come up with good characters, a good, interesting story. I only write one or two young adults a year.
Okay.
I do those because I have a firm belief that that every person should be able to see themselves in a book.
I do too. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So young,
the good, the
young
bad,
kids,
and the ugly too.
14, 15, 16-year-olds should be able to see themselves in a book. So that
yeah.
the kids that are gay at 14, 15, 16 years old should be able to pick up a book and see something of themselves. And
right,
know that,
right.
that I'm not alone. I'm not that different. There are other people. There are people writing books about people like me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's why I write.
It's so important for people to identify and to relate and to realize that they're not alone.
Yes, it is.
Well, listen, Andrew, I have had a very patient caller on the line by
well,
the name of Jill.
On.
All right, let's put Jill
on.
Okay. Here comes Jill. Hi, Jill. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How are you doing, sweetie?
Good. My first question is how many pages are your books?
My page, it's hard to tell because I don't write by page. I write by word.
Okay.
My books range from about 60,000 words to about 75,000 words.
And tell her what plates to, Andrew, because, you know, that means nothing to somebody that's not a writer.
Think about 200 to 220 pages.
Okay.
Nice.
Somewhere
length.
In that length. Some of them are a little longer. I have written some that are close to 100,000 words, which is about 300 pages. But I like to stick to that 65,000-75,000 word length.
Me too.
You always know you were a writer?
No, I didn't.
So what happened that you discovered that about yourself?
Okay, that's a good question. Number of years ago, when Dominic and my father's birthday is in July, and we had a 70th birthday party for my father, and this is, 2006? Yeah, 2005, 2006. And I discovered that everybody thought I looked like my father, and then when I went in the mirror and I realized I did, complete with the pot belly and all the things that go that most 70-year-olds have. So I decided to go to the gym and lose weight. And in order to do that, you need something to read on the treadmill because there's nothing more boring than treadmill time, and I discovered gay romance. So I started reading these gay romances on the treadmill, and I used to ration myself that I could only read them on the treadmill. And so I lost a lot of weight in a couple months because, oh, the book's really good. I'll just go for another half hour to finish it. And I lost all the weight. And then in about January of 2007, I got the idea and figured, I'm going to try writing one. And I did. I actually finished it. And then I reworked it and reworked it, and I actually got it published. And after that, it just continued. Once I had opened the door, it wasn't going to be closed again.
There you go. There you go.
Wow, that's a great story.
Isn't that great, Jill? Isn't he a spiritual man?
Yes. I don't know if you're aware of it, but you are. Like, all of your belief systems are in they're correct.
Well, I like to think so.
Jill is psychic, by the way, Andrew. She knows how to read a person. She can listen to somebody speak, and she knows when they're speaking truth. So you can count on what she says as being truth if you have any question about it.
That's cool. I would also
like to comment on, I really like gay men because they can go all over the place with you. You can talk about this, you can talk about that. They're open, they're more expanded, where men who aren't gay, you don't really get that from them. So that they're not going to hit on us, if you can go all over the place with them.
Well, and that's true, too. You're very right. If you have a straight friend who is very open, but they're... For a lot of women that I've talked to, there's still some sexual tension. There's still some tension there.
That's true.
And with gay men, there is no tension.
That's true. Because they're
not interested. There's also another thing that I've yet to meet. I read a lot of gay romances. Because if you're gonna write something, you have to read. You have to know what other people are doing. And one of the big stereotypes is the quiet, almost sullen alpha male. And I have never known a gay man who was a quiet, sullen alpha male in my life.
I've met a few. Yes.
I've known alpha males, but gay.
Yeah.
But. And I've known some quiet people, but gay men, you get gay men together and they generally talk.
Yes.
You get gay men together and you're not going to get, I have never met the quiet and sullen alpha male who will not talk to another guy.
That's true.
Shy around women, but guys talk.
Right.
And that's one of the things that tickles me pink with a lot of the women who write MM is they love these type of characters, but they don't really exist. Women think that men don't talk, but men don't talk to women other than gay men. Straight men don't talk to women. They talk to each other. Just like women talk to each other.
Yeah, and they violate other people's boundaries by talking behind people's backs.
Oh, everybody does that. It's human nature.
No, I suppose. I don't like
it,
though.
So when did you know you were gay?
Oh, me? Good grief. 14, 15 maybe? Definitively about 14 or 15.
Uh-huh.
I think I was in about the ninth grade. Eighth grade, I guess, looking back.
But you didn't know before that?
In eighth grade, I knew, I knew I'm different. I had sort of figured it out at the end of eighth grade, so I was probably 14 at the time, and had figured it out. Didn't mean I'd accepted it, but I had figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
figured out that I liked guys more than I liked girls. With the ramifications of all of that and being able to tell other people and all that sort of thing, oh, God, no, I hadn't figured that out yet. But I knew that I was gay at about 14.
See, the same thing happened to my girlfriend, my daughter's girlfriend, when she was 14. Same thing. She figured out she was a lesbian. Same thing, exact thing you said.
I mean, there's in the coming out process, there are two or three big steps. The first one is sort of figuring it out for yourself. Okay? The second one is deciding to tell people. And the third one is running out of people to tell. Okay.
That's great. I love it.
Okay.
Oh, that's great. You're too much.
But, yeah, it's the big steps is that first between one and two, once you've figured it out and then decide to tell people. It's like you'll often get the reaction, at least I did, well, did you just decide this? No, I just decided to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as though I didn't know. I just didn't decide to tell you. And it's the actually saying the words can be very difficult. That the three words, the three most difficult words to say in the English language are probably I love you, and the second most difficult words are I am gay.
So when you said you were, did people ever say I know?
Oh, God, yes. Goodness, yes. Being in the closet, the number one person you're fooling is yourself.
Right.
But there were people that didn't know. I mean, the people that care for you the most are probably the ones that are going to figure it out. Now, you are also going to get some people that are going to say, I know, when they didn't, just because they wanted to feel better and want to be more supportive, and they don't want you to think it really matters. It doesn't really matter. But my sister said, yeah, I figured it out. Yeah, no, she didn't. But that's okay. I was very lucky. I lost some friends. There were the people I went to college with that after I came out, I never heard from them again.
How unfortunate. It's really sad.
Coming out, if you're a gay person and you're thinking of coming out will cost you somebody in your life. There's no two ways about it. It will cost. It happens.
But that's their loss. That's their loss.
But there will be someone who does not accept that answer.
Well, yes, and that can be very wounding.
It can be
yeah,
very wounding.
Yeah, I mean, it feeds into abandonment, neglect, and betrayal issues. And that cuts deep.
But there will be far more people that will surprise you.
That's right.
For every person, every person that might reject you or not have anything to do with you anymore, there will be 10 people that will surprise you.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And they come from the least expected places sometimes.
Well, it's easy to condemn someone as in, I don't like gay people, and it's someone sitting on a porch saying that, and then when it's much harder when the person is standing in front of you and it's someone you've known all your life saying, I'm gay. That's very different. They're two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
They're two
mm-hmm.
eye-opening things. And anyone can change their mind. The president did.
Yeah.
The president did. I dare say a number of people have.
Changed their mind and decided they weren't gay.
No. What I mean is supporting...
Oh, as far as liking gay people.
As far as accepting people that are gay, yes.
Right.
That whole notion of changing your mind is so important in so many ways because it leads to freedom. We always have the right to change our minds about anything, and we don't need to explain ourselves.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I remember back a number of years ago, in a certain presidential campaign, and it was quite a while ago. And I remember a presidential candidate whom I just don't like and glad that he's not in office anymore.
Thank God.
Thank gosh. Yes. Who built his entire campaign around the fact that he didn't change his mind and he stuck with his values. And my belief is you have to have a mind before you can change it.
Thank you.
Okay. So growth and figuring things out and learning is part of the human experience. My beliefs are not the same ones I had in college or the same ones I had 10 years ago. They have refined. They have grown. I have learned more. And, yes, in about some things in life, I have changed my mind.
Let me jump in for just a minute. Can you run over a little bit, Andrew?
Sure. I thought we were going to 9 o'clock.
Oh, are we going till 9? I'll tell you, we can go till 9. The thing is, the live episode is only going to go until 8:30. The recorded version can go up to 2 hours. So what I'd like to do now is give you an opportunity for those live listeners who may, for whatever reason, not be able to go back and listen to the podcast, have you tell them about Love Comes Home, and then we can pick up the discussion where we left off. How's that sound?
That's excellent. Love Comes Home is part of the Senses series, and each one of these books deals with one of the senses. In this particular book, it deals with a sense of sight. Love Comes Home centers around a man who has a son that is going to go blind. And in the book, he does go blind.
Mm.
And before when he could see, he played Little League. So one of the things that I use to bring the couple together is the fact that they discover Beep Baseball, which is baseball for the blind. So
cool.
They work together to develop this little Beep Baseball league so that they can give Davey something that he's lost, namely his ability to play baseball. These senses stories all deal with a sense, and they all have children, and they're all very family-oriented. I have one more coming out. The next one comes out in a couple months. It's called Love Comes Around.
Mm, I love that title.
There's a trope in romance, and the trope is particularly a Western trope. It's the man, the very quiet alpha male who rescues injured horses. You know, he's the nurturer. He rescues the injured horses. And in this book, I have a very wealthy man who didn't have a family growing up. He's a self-made man, and he basically rescues the injured children. He has one little girl that walks with crutches, and during the story, he adopts Jerry, who has muscular dystrophy, is in a wheelchair.
Mm.
So he basically rescues he adopts and loves these basically throwaway children. Children that nobody wants, he raises them.
Let me jump in for just a minute. Is there anything else in 1 minute that you want to say about Love Comes Home?
If you love a family, if you love family romances, you're going to love this one. It's an absolutely adorable family romance.
How much research did you have to do to write a blind character?
Actually, this was my third blind character, so I have done the research. The first blind character was in Love Means No Boundaries. The second one was in Love Comes in Darkness, and that one was a lot of research because the entire Love Comes in Darkness is completely written from the perspective of the blind character.
Wow.
So it was very difficult. And it's probably one of the most wonderful books I've ever written.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, our live listeners are going to be leaving us in a minute, so please, if you want to continue to hear this episode, check out differentstrokes.freebroadcasting.com sometime later tonight or tomorrow, and you will find the podcast and can just move it forward or not, so you can pick up the thread. So how do you write with such emotion? I mean, I hear such passion in your voice when you're speaking. Is that how you do it?
I think so.
You so or you believe so? Or you know so?
Some things you don't know, they just are.
Uh-huh.
As near as I can tell, that's the only explanation that I have, is that you're, if you write what you feel, and if you feel what you're writing as you're writing it, your reader will feel it too.
Okay. Now, you identify Love Comes Home and the other books with the blind characters as being the Senses series. What makes it so unique?
I centered each one of the stories around a particular sense. The first one, the first book in that series is Love Comes Silently. And
okay.
In that story, I have a character that is mute. Patrick cannot speak.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
Okay. So it love mm-hmm. comes silently. And the next one, love comes in darkness.
Okay.
Howard is blind. In this one, Love Comes Home, it deals around the baseball theme, and it also deals with blindness. But they, it deals with figuring out how you are going to overcome.
I love that. Very spiritual again. You are spiritual. Holy cow.
And then Love Comes Around is very much building a family. Both characters were throwaways. Both characters were raised in foster care at some point. Their families were gone, and they had to make their own way in the world.
Okay.
And Love Comes Around is a play because the title means so many things for Love Comes Around. And other than to say that, I don't want to give away anything more.
No, we wouldn't want you to. We want the people to go out and buy your books. Tell us again, where are the places where they can buy your books?
The best place to buy them is at Dream Spinner Press.
Okay, and is that Dream Spinner Press dot something or other?
Yes, dreamspinnerpress.com, all one word.
Okay, and they just put in your name, Andrew Gray?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And that's G-R-E-Y.
E-Y, E-Y, yes. You can also get them all at Amazon. And if you go on Amazon and put me in, you can also get the Andrew Gray page on Amazon, which will have all my books listed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Anything else you want to say about Love Comes Home? Because I would be very interested in picking up the thread where we left off about your gay experience and seeing if Joel has any more questions about that, about your spirituality, about whatever, because she is such a good listener and good questioner. I could let her finish the interview.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear
sure
you.
Sure can.
No, it's been really interesting.
Didn't this surprise you, Jill?
And the way that
didn't
you go about life and how it works out for you because of the way that you think. All of it.
Well, you have to, at some point you have to say that you have to live for yourself and that you are going to follow your own heart and your own beliefs. If you try to live for someone else, you will be disappointed.
That's right.
And if you spend your entire life worried about what other people think, you will never figure out what you think and what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? How old were you when you figured that out?
Actually, I was always very independent. Even in high school, I did not follow the trends of this, that, or the other. I was always very independent. I spent my latter high school years in a small rural high school, and I spent most of the time doing things that the other kids just did not understand. I was interested in things that the other kids did not understand. I was interested in it, as an example, they were listening to whatever the popular music was back then. Oh, God, it was a number of years ago. over 30, and I was listening to classical music, opera, and various other things. I had come from a bigger city and moved to the small town, so I had already been exposed to things like opera and theater and real music, and what at the time what I considered real music, more classical music, big music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was interested in very different things. Didn't matter to me if they were interested or not. It didn't matter.
Talk about self-esteem.
I think it was just more stubborn, complete and total stubbornness on my part.
Okay.
I was going to do what I wanted, and if they didn't like, I didn't care, and that was it.
That's being honest. You're telling it like it is. I like that. Boy, I've got dogs barking. Come on, stop it.
I think it was just pure German stubbornness on my part.
That's all right. It's all right. No problem. So anything else you want to say on that note?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Jill, any more questions for Andrew?
No, I think I'm good. Thank you.
Well, yes, you are good. Andrew, anything else you want to share about you or your books?
Actually, I think we're good. We've covered, I have written so many stories. I have written stories.
Mm-hmm.
I picked the three more recent stories, but one of the things I love to do in my books is educate. Pick something that's out of the ordinary and or different. And one of my stories, it's The Good Fight, and I wrote, that was published, I think, in 2012 or even 2011. 2012, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And The Good Fight is set on a Native American reservation in South Dakota and deals with how Native American children are treated in the South Dakota child welfare system. It's also a romance, but it deals with how these children were treated. And it's a very powerful book.
Well, you know, I trust that all of your books would be very inspiring, and I wish I had time to read them. And I hope that listeners that are compulsive readers, that want to get in touch with their spirits, that want to find peace, that want to find books that speak to being true to yourselves because Andrew knows who he is, that you will buy Andrew's books and support this up-and-coming author. I mean, this man has given a gift to you, and it's yours for the asking. And he's told you where to go, Dream Spinner Press, or dreamspinnerpress.com, is that correct?
Yes.
And Amazon.com.
Yes, and if you're not an Amazon person, barnesandnoble.com has them as well.
Okay.
If you want
all right.
to know,
and are
website,
they,
I have on each one of the titles.
Are they available on Kindle and Nook?
Yes, they are. They're all available in Kindle and Nook.
That's great.
If you go to
that's
my
great.
Website, I have buy links for each title. So you can go through my website and find the buy links for each title as well.
Beautiful. Well, I thank you for coming on the show tonight. And when you've written another 6 books, which is probably going to be 6 months from now, let's have you back. How's that sound?
That's great.
Okay, Andrew, thank you so much. And Jill, thank you for being
thank
there.
You.
If you want to call me later, you know how to reach me.
Okay.
So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. And by the way, Andrew, you should be a spirit life coach. You could really help a lot of people that way. Just a little food for thought. So with that said, I wish you all a great week. And remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.